love this podcast? Support us by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Hit the link in the episode description to support us now. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
So a couple of weeks ago, Rolando approached me about a special kind of Remakes, Reboots, Revivals episode. He asked me, do you think Snack Snyder's Justice League qualifies for this podcast?
Snack Snyder?
What did I say?
It sounded like you said Snack Snyder, and I love that. Because right. He's kind of a snack. He's kind of hot.
He's kind of a zaddy. I actually don't really know what he looks like.
He's like really muscular. Face is a little bit on like the basic side, but
is it a butterface?
A little bit, I would say. It's not like grotesque, but I think he's more body than face.
Well, I meant to say Zack Snyder, so we'll see that in editing. But he asked me, does Zack Snyder's Justice League qualify? And honestly, it doesn't, right? If you really, really think about it, in terms of basics, it doesn't. But you could make an argument that his original film was remade by the studio and that it just got released in its original format, which is a very interesting way of looking at it, don't you think?
I mean, I think so. I actually come from the mindset that the one that the studio puts out is the original. That's ultimately the one that the industry paid for and distributed, and therefore it is the original. And the Zack Snyder cut, be it the fact that it was the original footage, mixed in with some reshoots, that is a remake of the original, despite the fact that it is in its entirety
the original,
right? I don't know. I love this. I also pitched it because I think it's such an interesting conversation for us to have as filmmakers.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. We're constantly complaining a lot about how studio interference messes up a movie, and here is proof of it. And what happens?
Yeah. And that is a discussion worth having alone. Mm-hmm. You know, like the artist's voice like versus studio interference. And the studio's voice, actually. The studio's like way of making a movie versus a person, an individual, you know, an artist. If you're going to call Snack Snyder an artist. No, I'm just going to call him Snack Snyder. But it's so funny because right after we talked about it, we actually heard from a podcast friend of ours, the Brotherhood of Batman. You may remember in October 2019 that we did a two-part episode where we covered different Batmans and different Jokers in preparation for 2019's big Joker movie. And they joined us for both of them, and it was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And they contacted us about possibly covering Justice League for their podcast. And I begrudgingly said yes, only because of the content. I love those boys. And you were excited and you said yes. And so we went and we guest starred on their podcast, but we are also releasing it as our own episode today.
Yes.
This might go down as the longest cold open we've ever done. But point is, today we're covering Justice League as guest stars on the Brotherhood of Batman podcast. I'm Nicole.
And I'm Rolando.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast
about unoriginality. So before we go on over to our recording session with the Brotherhood of Batman, last week we did a question and answer episode. You guys have reached out to us and we wanted to reach back out to you. Well, in response to that, you guys have reached out to us again and we've gotten such overwhelming positivity from that episode. Thank you for continuing to reach out.
Yeah. And responding to our responses, which I thought is lovely. It's just like, oh, it's like a conversation we're having.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, exactly. We are having a conversation. So yeah, so again, thank you guys so much for reaching out. And if you want to reach out for the first time or you want to continue reaching out, but you don't know where, Rolando, where can they do that?
You guys can reach out to us via email, which is a lot of your preferred method. The email address is remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com. And you can also hit us up on our social media pages, Instagram/remakesrebootsrevivals. We're also on Facebook/remakesrebootsrevivals.
Yeah.
And you can hit us up on Twitter @remakespodcast.
That's right. And you can leave us a voicemail. That number is, which we might play on the air. So, you know, put on
Sure, we did it last week. So you never know.
862-248-2326. That number again, 862-248-2326.
we're only going to be playing a portion of the episode, so you can be sure to check out the full episode at their podcast, Brotherhood of Batman,
yep,
where it features fun little anecdotes that we have in terms of our experience with geekiness this week. Mm-hmm. I think it's a fun listen. And they also talk about their cocktail of choice for the movie, which I kind of wanted to drink, and I'm so upset that I couldn't find the cocktail recipe, the cocktail ingredients,
yeah,
in time, yeah. So what a bummer. But yeah, check out their full episode, but stay tuned to the very end of this episode, because Nicole and I are going to just rehash things out one last time. We want to answer our podcast question, which was not answered on their podcast, so
yes. So stay tuned for some extra bonus content at the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
All right. See you at the end.
All right. So the reason we are all here is to talk about two lovely movies, which I had never seen until this assignment. So I am very fresh. I watched both of them this week for the first and only time. And we are, of course, talking about Justice League. So in the spirit of y'all's remake, reboot, revival, I'm so sorry. I had to make sure I had the order correct. And y'all, in the spirit of that, how would you guys clarify this or classify this? Would it be a remake? Is it an original make?
No, that's I think that's a great question, because I think me and Nicole have actually talked about this on the podcast, right? Even like in passing, how do you classify this? I think it counts as a remake, or because it is a re-edit. All right, the only reason I think it's fine to count this as a remake is only because the Joss, even just watching these, the studio and Joss Whedon interfered so much with the original cut that when you get the new one, it is like a completely, almost a different movie.
So is the Joss Whedon movie the remake?
So
yeah,
oh, so
I would say
right,
that.
That's fair. I possibly, yeah. Well, I don't know, because they had to do reshoots for the
yeah,
final cut of the Snyder cut. So maybe.
Yeah, and like, I mean, reshoots and stuff in like Hollywood and like re-editing, you know, it's so common. But on this level, it's just like, it's, I feel like this is like a new level of that where it's more than just a director's cut, you know, Zack Snyder's version. It is kind of like a completely different film.
Yeah. I'm impressed they were able to get all the superheroes back together, that they were available for that.
Shut
amount
up,
of time.
Aaron.
Right.
Well, this was all happening. Luckily, a lot of this was happening during the quarantine. So, like, they probably looked at it just like people were looking for work and just like, all right.
Oh, yeah,
sure.
That's probably true.
Yeah. Because a lot of this picked up steam. Like, I guess people are just stuck at home and they're just like, you know what? What I really want, I want to sit on TV and watch 4 hours of Zack Snyder's original Justice League cut. And HBO caved.
I can happily say that I have never been bored enough in quarantine to actually want to watch this movie. So. yes, so let's go ahead and talk about the original released one first, the Joss Whedon movie. Anybody want to give a fun little like 30-second recap of the movie?
Ooh, that's a great task. If no one's up to it, I can try to do it. I always try to recap the movies.
Yeah, yeah, go
so
for it. So
we 100% we're going to make you guys do it.
All right. Yeah, yeah.
You sound all so right, professional and knowledgeable.
So, let's see. I'll try to do the best I can. So Justice League, the original WB edit, takes us soon after Superman has died in Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. And in this world, by the time the movie starts, Batman is already aware that like there's something fishy going on, that's intergalactic planetary madness. He's figured out that parademons are trying to invade Earth, so he's trying to gather up the superheroes of legend that he had discovered, had learned about, specifically Aquaman, The Flash, and Cyborg. And so him and Wonder Woman, who are the backbone of the original edit, they are working together to try to recruit these people in order to save the world from the big bad, Steppenwolf. And Steppenwolf is sent, he's here on Earth to conquer us. He wants to use the mother boxes as a way to what's he trying to do? He's trying to use,
he was born to be boxes, wild.
Yeah, I don't know, he's just a big bad. He wants to destroy Earth for some reason, or take over, yeah, or whatever. He gets the mother boxes, and what he ends up doing is he ends up they end up discovering that, oh my god, guys, we could revive Superman. He'll help us defeat Steppenwolf. They do. Superman goes crazy, but don't worry, he comes in to save the day at the end with everybody. So, you know, That's it. That is my recap of
that was beautiful. See, Jake, that is how you do a recap. You give knowledge and then we talk about it.
My recaps are perfect. Thank you very much.
Do I need to read Aaron for it?
Yeah.
I'm sure I missed some things, but yeah.
No, that's great. Thank you. That's perfect. Because yeah, now we just want to talk about it. So I first of all need to say that I grew up as a huge Joss Whedon fan. I am very aware that it is no longer acceptable to be a huge Joss Whedon fan, and that breaks my little heart. But
Same, yeah. No, I agree. Like, I love Buffy, you know? And now I'm still going to continue watching Buffy, but it's just like, it's such a shame that he has tarnished his good name.
Yeah, absolutely. But this was sort of the beginning of his end. I heard that this movie was trash, so I avoided watching this movie. And then when watching it, I actually enjoyed this one. I'm just going to put it out there right now for my brothers. I liked this one more than the 4-hour one.
Of course you did.
Because it was 2 hours less of my life.
That's fair.
I am not surprised by that.
Nobody.
At all. No, not even a little bit.
The colors are brighter.
It's cheekier.
There's some like fun references to the comic books that didn't make it into the other ones. Mm-hmm. So that's my 2 cents. So how do we want to talk about it?
Outside of just regular feelings, right? Like, all right. So, Ben, we know that you didn't see this movie when it came out. What about everybody else? Did anyone watch it in theaters?
I don't believe I did. I think I bought it used at a game video shop couple years after it came out. I think I watched it once. And I didn't think it was horrible, but I think Marvel has just done such a better job building the backstory of all these characters. And you throw all these characters that have, you know, wonderful histories, wonderful origins. You throw them all together without any of that to tie the viewers together. And, you know, I didn't have any buy-in to the characters. I wasn't, like, emotionally connected to them like you do with some of the people that have, you know, 2 or 3 movies on their own. Like, you know, I'm a big fan of the Aquaman movie, which is goofy and cheesy, but I think it's well done and provides a good background. And I wish they hadn't rushed everything to put it out and try to compete when they didn't do the legwork needed to
do the solo movies first.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I always found that was such an interesting. So I know part of the reason why the WB wanted to do this route instead of going the Marvel Cinematic Universe route was because they wanted to kind of differentiate themselves. So it's just like, let's just throw them all into a movie first together. And then we'll tell everyone's individual story. And now we know that in practice, that was just a huge mistake because just like we have no connection with these characters. Even Batman, who we have seen in many different movies, because he's so different here, we don't have that same connection.
Yeah.
He's much different in this. And he's, you know, I like Affleck as the Batman in these, but it's not developed. It's not like put out there. He's just kind of doing random things and there's not a lot of connection.
Well, the whole movie spends time with Batman trying to backpedal his character to be something more familiar to the general audience as their Batman, where in Batman v Superman, he's an antagonist with Superman. They're going head to head the entire movie. He's angry, he's killing people. And now this movie, they're trying to brighten him up and be like, okay, he's the team leader. He's trying to rectify all that. And so it's asking us to change our opinion of a character that we haven't even learned what his status quo should be. And I think he's the hardest character to connect with in the entire series because he's all over the place in any version of Batman that we've seen.
I also don't like how thick his rubber neck is.
Oh. That costume. So I actually am a fan of the costume design. I'm just not a fan of the. No. So I actually like the costume design in general. It's that neck piece. You're right. Like the whole cowl. The fact that like they kind of went back and decided like we're not going to make him as mobile as the design in the Dark Knight series was kind of just a step back. It's just like we know that like that giving the neck mobility makes the actor a little more able to communicate a little better. And this one, he had to like move his shoulders and stuff. It's annoying. It was like a big step back in costume design. It was like kind of disappointing. But I thought the color schematics for me, it all worked. Because he looked like, for me, his design really reminded me like something straight out of the comic books or even the animated series.
Mm-hmm. For sure, yeah. I just, every time he takes his mask off and he's got the wide V-neck underneath, like where the cowl should be, I'm like, no, 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 put it back on, put it back on.
Yeah, I do like his trench coat.
That's not in this movie, Aaron. That's in the remake.
No, it's in the Whedon one.
That's true. Yep, yep.
The dream sequence, the first dream sequence.
The dream sequence is in Batman v Superman, and then again.
Oh, you're right. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't watch Batman v Superman. I fell asleep.
So I watched them.
That wasn't
all,
the assignment.
leading up to this movie, I went through Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, Wonder Woman, the original Justice League. I haven't watched in a while, but I watched the Snyder one twice. I did go see the original. Yeah, twice.
Wow. He hates himself.
No, I that love, is dedication I love to the craft, really long man. Movies. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did go see the original Whedon cut in the theaters with the wife and the teenager. And I remember leaving, not disappointed, but just completely unsatisfied. It was like, okay, that was a movie. It was what it was. It was the first time, I think, that I did not immediately go out and buy it on disc when it was released.
Right.
Like, right. That changed. Even for Marvel movies, like, after that, I was just like, okay, I don't need every one of them. I'll come back to this movie later on and revisit it. And I didn't. I didn't for quite a while go back and rewatch it.
Yeah. Interesting. Me and Eddie got to see the movie in theaters, but we actually got to see the movie for free because we got to attend a screening of it that was hosted by this company. Awesome. And thank God it was for free because otherwise I would have been so angry. Like, I remember that being the reaction. Like, we both laughed and we're just like, wow, I cannot wait to not see this with friends. Because, like, I think I had one friend who was considering watching this in the theater, like, opening weekend. Because that was our thing back then, right? When we could go to movie theaters, go to the opening weekends. It was always a fun thing. This one was, I think for the most part, though, Batman v Superman did leave such a sour taste in our mouth that we were really considering not. Most of us, like, my group of friends is usually four of us. I think only one of us was still down to see, like, this Justice League in theaters. And that was only just to see, all right, can it redeem itself? And the answer was no. But keep in mind, like, I also read a lot of the trade magazines for Hollywood and a lot of those gossip rags. And I happen to know a lot of the behind-the-scenes drama that was going on for Justice League, right? So for anyone who doesn't know,
That lasso of truth kind of brings a lot out in Hollywood.
Yeah. Yeah, but so what happened was the studio was really interfering with Snyder. They were already on shaky ground after the disappointing box office returns from Batman v Superman, but they were already well in production for Justice League, all right? And then Zack Snyder's daughter committed suicide. And after she committed suicide, he and his wife, who's one of the producers, took a step back from the production of Justice League. And I think at this point it was in post-production. And then of all people they decided to bring in was Joss Whedon. I remember reading that and I'm just like, this is an interesting choice. That's such a big difference. And, you know, he had just, I don't think he had just left the Avengers, but he was, you know, he did bring the first Avengers movie. So it's just like, all right, let's see what happens here. Right. And
the first one was good.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. You're right. The first one is good. The second one is kind of forgettable, Age of Ultron. But all right. So when this announcement happened, I'm not happy about how Zack Snyder got off of the project, but I was not a fan of Zack Snyder's handling of the DC universe in general. I think he's a little too heavy-handed with his symbolism. I think he's a little too heavy on the color grading.
A little.
He takes himself way too seriously for a series that, like, doesn't have to. I get it. I think DC usually tries to make themselves, like, really gods amongst men. And they have, like, these three, the Trinity is, like, so much holier than thou than any Marvel character.
Right.
And there's always been a disconnect with, I think, with the general audience versus a DC audience, right? Like, DC audience will eat that shit up. But I think generally speaking, like, most people will gravitate towards, like, the fun and levity of a Marvel character over over right. the DC ones, despite the fact that everyone knows the big three. Everyone knows Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, right? But I think people would still prefer to like both either read or watch movies of the other ones that are a little lighter, a lot of fun. Except with the exception of Batman, obviously. Where am I going with all this? I'm sorry. I'm like ranting.
Yo, you're good. So that's totally the format of our podcast. We just say whatever we want and then we figure it out later. So
we just move on to something else. Yeah,
I think I'm just saying it's okay. Yeah. So I was upset. Obviously, like, thoughts and prayers for Zack Snyder's daughter. But like in my, you know, what I was also thinking was just like, okay, great. He's off this project finally. And then they brought in Joss Whedon. I think my reaction was just like, okay, this is a good sign. This could be a good thing. Until I realized like, when they said they're going to reshoot. And then you also find out, oh, by the way, Henry Cavill isn't going to be shaving his mustache that he's using for Mission Impossible. Okay. So the question then becomes like, well, do we need them reshot? Like, we can't just re-edit? Like, the movie is supposed to be in post. Why? And this is coming from me as someone who works in the industry who understands editing and stuff. It's just like, you could still... you could take that 4-hour original cut of Zack Snyder and still trim it down to give you that same story without 4 hours of it. So
the
I don't
amount
know.
Of directing that goes on in the editing room is substantial for a movie. And it could have been Whedon's cut of the movie just using the footage that was already done. But instead they filmed a new movie almost for the original version.
And my assumption Nicole, you're the one who usually gets these facts right. But who is the final director? Yeah. Who's the director that shows up on Justice League on the title?
The original Zack Snyder.
Zack Snyder.
He
retained
that. Yep.
He retained the right. Okay, that means in terms of directing, Joss Whedon didn't do... Because there's like a rule. There is... if a certain director ends up directing... If two directors end up splitting the work 50-50... the credit goes to no one. I think it goes to like a made up name in the guild that gets that credit. And it's like I forget the name, but there's a one movie I think that that happened that also got nominated for an Oscar, but I don't remember off the top of my head. Maybe not nominated for an Oscar, but it had come up before. But anyway,
I don't think it was either of these movies.
No.
You're actually thinking of Gone with the Wind and Wizard of Oz, but we can just skip over that.
Okay.
So Joss got writing credit. He's credited as one of the writers, which I guess would make sense if he came in and rewrote stuff, but I don't know.
Yeah.
That's just how they wanted to do it. So I watched the Whedon version after the Snyder version, and I was really surprised that there were scenes in the Whedon version that were nowhere in the 4 hours. I was like, how much freaking footage was made for this movie? Mm-hmm. Because like you guys had said, you could have just chopped down the 4 to 2 and had a movie, but apparently it was too disjointed or too crazy. I did enjoy... But again, I'm coming from the perspective that A, I love bright colors, and B, I was watching it second. And so I enjoyed the Whedon version because I already knew what the big picture was. It felt like the Snyder version was reading the novel, and then the Whedon version was the movie of the novel.
Oh, that makes sense.
Because versions are going to be shorter and, you know, a little different tonally. So I enjoyed it in that sense. And one thing I really liked that I think we can start getting into some characters and some choices. I liked Lois Lane in the Whedon version more than in the Snyder version, because in the Whedon version, she let him know, like, hey, you're brought back for a purpose. And she also was still going to work. Lois Lane is not going to lay in her bed and not go to work. I did not buy that for a second. So for me, something that I enjoyed in the Whedon version more than the Snyder was the use of Lois Lane, because I was so frustrated in the Snyder version when Clark came back. They went to all this damn trouble to get Clark back. Then he flies off and they're like, okay, plan B. I'm like, no plan B.
Well, he played with some butterflies first.
Yeah, digitally put in butterflies that weren't in the Whedon version. So that's my two cents of like something I enjoyed about the Whedon that was very different, I thought, was Lois. What about you guys? Any characters or things that you enjoyed or particularly didn't enjoy about the Whedon version?
Well, I'm glad you brought up Lois, because I agree on the initial watching of the movies that I think she gets back into the world and is a little bit more of that hardcore Lois Lane that defines the Lois Lane character in Superman
comics. She references
comics.
Being a reporter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. But upon reading, like, I went back and reread The Death of Superman, The World Without, and I'm reading The Reign of Superman.
Jake, currently. I never want to hear you're busy again. You got too much time on your hands.
Seriously.
Yeah. So in The World Without Superman, which is the aftermath of his death, Lois Lane acts a lot like she does in the Snyder movie. And that made me appreciate a lot more. Like, she shuts down and doesn't know what to do at the loss of her fiance and the world's, you know, leading superhero, and dealing with the duality that she was engaged to Clark Kent and, you know, in love with Superman.
For our listeners and our East Coast friends, I rolled my eyes so hard right now, but go ahead, Jake. I believe you. I'm not going to read it.
Of course you're not. We were way past that in our timeline. But I think that there is something well done to... I love when Martha comes to visit her. I wish they didn't pull that switcheroo that they did with Martha in the Snyder version, but we'll get to that.
Martha!
But I like that it shows some humanity. Like, there's a big lack of humanity in these characters, and Lois Lane does get to be one of the humans that we get to connect to. And I think it's one, Rolando, you were talking about the difference between the DC and then the lighthearted Marvel. I think the Marvel has a humanity that the DC movies have always lacked, because it's hard to connect with these godlike characters. And I think bringing Lois in and showing that vulnerability does help a little bit, because the world is grieving and we get to grieve along with them via Lois mm-hmm. Lane.
Yeah. No, I mean, so I could have gone with either Lois Lane, to be quite honest. I think the reason why either is fine is because we've only had one Superman movie and then one Batman Superman movie, right? And Lois Lane and Clark Kent's relationship really didn't... By the time Batman v Superman started, like, they were already, like, in a committed relationship and stuff. But, like, I don't know. It wasn't the same kind of relationship that I saw, like, let's say, with Iron Man and Pepper Potts.
Right.
Right.
Right. It wasn't developed.
Where, yeah. So, like, if Pepper Potts got a movie where, like, now, after Iron Man is dead, after Infinity Wars, right? Seeing her grieve, that makes sense to me, because I have seen this relationship from, like, beginning to end. And where this Lois Lane one is just like, okay, watching her grieve makes sense, but, like, seeing her grieve for such a long time, I was thinking when I was re-watching the new one, the Snyder Cut, I was just thinking, it's just like, I don't know, but, like, didn't they kind of hadn't been together that long, so what's this deep love that they have for each other? Despite the fact that I know the history.
Yeah, you know, I'm wondering if they're taking into account or thinking that the viewers of this had seen, like, the Christopher Reeve Superman movies, where that relationship is fully developed and that they've seen the backstory and know that that relationship has been more developed in previous movies by, you know, years ago.
Yeah, it was.
So I'm wondering if they're thinking that way. I didn't pay too much attention in the Lois Lane because she didn't have one of those slow motion cut CGI scenes.
That's
so
not true. She slow motion put her coffee down. And I watched a review where someone's like, the Zack Snyder version gives as much attention, or, like, it takes as long for Lois to put her coffee down as it does for Flash to go back in time. And I thought that was very funny.
Nice.
That's a good one. Nicole, what say you of the Snyder cut of the, because I know this is, like, I mean, you must be, God, you spent 7 hours watching these two movies, so tell me.
Yeah.
I know you.
Well, so, I'm an outsider in the sense where I am not the type of person who, like, watches a lot of superhero movies. I only saw the Batman versus Superman movie for the podcast and stuff. I haven't seen Wonder Woman, which I feel like I would probably like. And
the first
and
one is better than everything we're talking about.
Agreed.
I've heard it's very good.
It's true.
The last Snyder film that I saw was Watchmen, which I was not a fan of at all. So just, like, going into this, I was like, ugh, right? But surprisingly, I might surprise you guys. I think the Zack Snyder film is better. And then the Whedon weird Hollywood one. And it's really interesting because it kind of brought up this interesting conversation I had with myself, which is, you know, what makes a film good? Because they're coming from two completely different types of filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
The Hollywood released Whedon one is all about story, pushing the story forward, constantly moving, montaging, just making sure you're getting all this information that's important to the story. Whereas Snyder's one is more focused on character
and weird
and
shit, yeah.
atmosphere. And it's so self-indulgent. I mean, this could have been like 2.5 hours if you took out like that random scene of Aquaman drinking whiskey for like 2 minutes by the ocean. You know, shit like that could have been taken out. Like Snyder is so self-indulgent and he's a little pretentious, but I actually appreciated. Actually, he's really pretentious. but I actually really appreciated the fact that he wasn't as concerned with story, because I think that at the end of the day, people are a little too concerned with moving the story forward. And I think that's a very American way of making a film, is that Americans prioritize story. If you kind of like look at other, if you look at international films, you'll find a lot of other countries don't care as much about story. They care more about atmosphere and they care more about characters, because, you know, you're watching a film, it's more about the visuals and stuff. It's not as much about the story. There should be a story, because then what the hell are you watching? But then that's also an art conversation. So it's, I think that it's interesting too, because there's good things about both films and then there's not so good things. But when it's like really just like dissecting the differences, for me at least, between certain sequences. And a big one for me was the bank heist of Wonder Woman that she like saved. From the Whedon versus the Snyder one, where overall the Snyder one, the way that that was built, you know, like the atmosphere of like those children, right? They had their fear of what was happening to them was so present in the Snyder one, where you didn't even realize that there were all these hostages one in the Whedon one until like after Diana got the information out of that guy. You know what I mean? Like in terms of the, like what the people who are there, who are present, were feeling, the overall like tone of it, you know, like even though, you know, the guy with the gun and the music playing was like, I was like obviously really self-indulgent. At the end of the day, you actually felt that fear. I don't know. I personally did.
Oh, I agree completely.
And you got a sense of what was going on better. Another one that I just want to point out too, I'm kind of like going on because I have my notes right in front of me.
You're good.
But like the story of Steppenwolf as told by Diana to Bruce, right? One sitting in the Snyder film, and you really get a sense of all the different, you know, the Atlanteans.
Right.
That there's fucking Zeus and Ares there. humans and Amazonians, and they all came together, and there's this big whole thing, and you actually you understand what's going on, and you understand like how they all banded together to save this. But in the Whedon one, first of all, he like makes them go by a lake. Like he breaks up the story, which was weird. Like it wasn't in one sitting, it was like constantly moving, which is also like, why was that necessary? And there was more jokes in there too. But I felt like the story wasn't as clear, which is interesting, because the Whedon one is more about story and pushing it forward.
Well, I actually disagree with you, Nicole. I don't think the Whedon one is about story. I think it's about beats. It's about hitting those beats to get you to the next part. They don't, I don't even think they cared about story, because I don't remember the story that well from the Whedon cut. Like, I can't tell you why they were trying to get the mother boxes. I can tell you, but because the mother boxes, I don't even think played as big of a, they were like the, they were a MacGuffin, sure. But like, even to the point where they weren't related to how Superman came back to life, right? Like it was, you know, you could just tell how this was. So yeah, I don't think it's story per se. I think it's about, it's more so about hitting those beats, like getting you to the next part, like the exposition dump. And now we're going to get this band together. We're going to hit that all is
lost. But that's story.
The
highlight reel. Exposition dump is story.
No. Yeah, yeah. But I also think at the same time, though, story. So I maybe, and this is just me, like from my school of thought, where I think story is more so, the story is not necessarily the plot, right? I think the beats usually relate with the plot. The story overall, I think, includes character development and includes like, what's it called? The journey, where a plot is like, yeah. So for me, like, so like a, I'm trying to think of like how to say a good example. All right. So a story is me going to a party and getting so drunk that I throw up, right? Like that's just a story. The journey is more so of me, the story of me deciding to go to the party, and then the next day after that party, the repercussions of that party, right? That would be, that for me is a, that, did I say that right? The plot, I'm sorry. No, the plot is me just going to a party and getting drunk. That's a plot. me.
Would you classify this party as a gala
or a gala?
Oh yeah, in my fantasy for sure. That gets like held up at bank robbery. Yeah. No, yeah, for sure. But no, and then the story for me is though, like me waking up deciding I'm going to go to a party, and then next day after getting drunk at that party, dealing with those repercussions. That story. Does that make sense? I like, there is a little bit of a difference, and I think the Whedon cut really focuses more so on like those hitting those beats and just making sure, just really, really, just like throwing you on a ride that like by the end you're just like, oh, mm-hmm. Okay,
like cool. Check boxes. He's right. Like marking off the boxes. Mm. So for any of our regular listeners, this is what people who know what they're talking about sounds like. We're usually
only
like
nominally.
Colors. Batman, you suck. All right.
I mean, that I just want to come back to Rolando because that is actually interesting. And I think we agree in different ways because mm-hmm. I guess, you know, in the first 5 minutes, it's all about, you know, we're putting together a Justice League. I'm trying to find Barry Allen. Is it Barry Allen?
Yes. Yeah.
Yep, it is Barry Allen.
Flash.
Good job.
Very good, Nicole.
Thank you.
They call him Barry Allen.
My favorite.
You said he was your favorite?
He was my favorite just because I love Ezra Miller. I mean, come on.
Let's talk about The Flash. Fantastic. So The Flash is the only reason I wanted to watch this movie originally. Ezra Miller is on the queer spectrum, right?
He is, but isn't he also problematic because he like literally verbally, like physically assaulted someone?
Oh, okay.
I thought he was canceled for that. He like physically, he got
oh
drunk
my God.
And
I can't
physically
keep
assaulted
up with
someone.
Well, never mind.
Well, we're talking about The Flash, and his character in these movies very much reminded me of Tom Holland's Peter Parker, the naivete, the growing up, the just the kind of persona that he had in the Marvel movies. So I thought there was a connection to how they were trying to have The Flash be played out in these.
I felt like he was super neurotic. It didn't to me seem like he was teeny. Like, so from the Snyder cut, it felt like he was being like the comedy relief. Like, okay, you got to get this in here. Mm-hmm. But in the Whedon cut, where it's all lighter, he just sort of felt like he was like, there was something different about him. You know, there was just
I thought he was on the spectrum.
Yes, I did too. Yeah. I was like, oh, are we getting our first autistic superhero? Because I'm super into that. Thank you for saying it. For sure. But
I thought he was playing it like he had Asperger's or something, like Sheldon from like The Big Bang
Absolutely.
Theory, right? Like something. He's not like you know, that's so far off the spectrum that he can't function, but like clearly doesn't understand social cues, that kind of stuff. At least that's how they edited him in the Whedon cut. I will agree with you on that.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm glad I wasn't just seeing that. My my husband actually brought it up. I was like, oh, you're right. He's coming across very differently in these two versions.
Well, as an acting choice, I can get on board with it. Like, if his mind works as fast as his body does, like, he's processing information at a different rate than anybody else is. And I like where he went with that character, but he does not feel like a Barry Allen to me. And if you're going to put the Justice League together for the very first time in cinema, I want the Barry Allen. I don't think we've actually seen a live action Barry Allen that is anywhere near what the comic book version
is. No, because the one on the TV show, in my opinion, is very much written like Wally West.
Right. Mm-hmm. And because Wally West was the Flash of the 90s, that's the Flash that so many people are familiar with and so many people want to be harkened back to. And that's the general consensus of our age group of what Flash is, that they keep melding that into the Barry Allen story. I was very happy that we got the Iris West scene in the Snyder cut. I thought that was the best Flash scene of the entire movie.
I agree. I love when he touches his wiener.
For sure. Wait, question. Which Flash is in the Justice League TV show? Like the animated?
Oh, the TV show?
The Unlimited? That's Wally West.
Oh, that's Wally West. Okay.
Yeah.
I like that Flash. Like the kind of womanizer, fast talker. Fun.
Voiced by Lex Luthor from Smallville. Fun fact.
Yes, it's true. Michael Rosenberg. Or Rosenbaum? Rosenbaum, I think.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed yeah. your guys' Superman episode that Nicole set out for. Not because you set out, Nicole. Not because you set out.
Wow.
No, no. I just
so
I
ridiculous.
Love Smallville.
No, I get it.
I'm so sorry. I love Smallville, so I was like, I gotta listen to this one. And
I needed an excuse to just talk about hot men for like a whole hour.
Right? I get it. I get it. I was doing dishes and I was like, oh, I don't agree. That's a 4-star. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, so definitely if you want to listen to that episode, you guys should look it up. But I will say I was very disappointed in that episode when you called, when you said that Lois referred to Clark as Kansas, because it was very clearly she referred
Smallville.
To him as Smallville, which is...
It's Smallville, yes. I think I caught myself.
You did. Anyways, enough razzing on that. So we've done Flash. Any big differences you guys want to talk about?
Did you say besides Flash?
Yeah, I mean, you can, if you have more about Flash, by all means.
Oh, no. I actually wanted to talk about the character of Cyborg.
Oh, yeah.
And
that would be
the
best.
I felt
that's,
about yes, that please. Character. Yeah. From Snyder to Whedon. I think, according to Fisher, apparently, the only scene of his directed by Snyder, which was in the theatrical cut, was him meeting up with Batman and Commissioner Gordon.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So the rest of all of his other stuff was reshot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So knowing that. Yeah, and then knowing that and watching the Snyder cut, which overall just like the buildup of that character and his backstory, I actually really appreciated. You know, it's like we're getting a little information here and there. We're like kind of like learning what's his deal. And then you find out, you know, his whole how he died and all of that. I thought it was actually way more impactful, which I thought was really surprising because, you know, the one thing I always felt about Snyder was how cold he was. He doesn't really understand like... you know, like people's emotions, which is why his films don't have these great sense of humor. And they just kind of are more so about like the dark, quote unquote, grittiness of it.
And
like,
spectacle.
You know, yeah. And Snyder's very much like that guy who just kind of like got a camera and was like, oh, my God, I could do slow motion. Oh, my God. When I throw water, you could see all the particles. He's so enamored with like what film can do, which is like cute in some ways, but then that's my big word of him is overindulgent and self-indulgent
right.
because it's also like, okay, it's not great to do this anymore. Also, the scene with Barry Allen and that girl when he like got her out of the car and he played with her hair was super creepy, but that's less thing I want to say about.
Because he's in love. He's going to fall in love with her.
Yeah, Iris.
That's Iris.
Yeah, Iris West.
His true love.
Yeah. Falls in love in the blink of an eye.
Weird.
I mean, yeah, I don't.
Yeah, there was a. What, I felt like it went like 2 seconds too long.
Oh yeah, I.
But
actually,
then it transferred to the hot dog, and then it was like, okay.
Well, with the hot dog, actually, I will say, I thought he was going to do something funny where he was going to take the hot dog and kind of stick it in her mouth. I was just like, this is going to be weird.
That would have not been okay.
No, that would not
that
be okay.
Definitely been.
A- That's a no-no. That's a no-no. But I do want to say something about the Cyborg because that was my issue. With the Josh Whedon cut was that Cyborg was a character that was a missed opportunity there, was not developed. I saw all this potential in this character, and I love the character Cyborg period from the comics, and I just saw what a waste, especially having this like element of like where you feel like you have like body issues because of you're like you're like Frankenstein. And it's your dad that put you in this situation. And so you have like these all these body issues and dad issues mixed together and nothing gets said. His character is just in one scene and another and nothing is experienced from him or seen through his eyes. But when we have this Justice League, Snyder Cut, now... this character is so much more. He becomes almost like the heart of the story. And you get his journey. You know, you get his journey and you get this like, even though it's not so much to say, it's not like a father and son happy ending, but there is this process of healing, you know? And he doesn't become like he's, and what I was speaking to Rolando earlier, it's like he's angry and his anger at one point made him paralyzed. But now he had a mission and he used that anger and he focused it to become a hero, to become courageous.
Right.
Yeah. I think he actually ends up being the backbone of the entire movie. His relationship and story with his father progresses the actual story beats much better in the Snyder Cut than it does in the Whedon. We understand mm-hmm. what Star Labs is doing with the mother boxes. We understand more about what the mother boxes are capable of through his father's work, their relationship, and Cyborg's reluctancy to become a hero is all what this movie is about, is Batman trying to pull these guys together to be a team where they don't want to be a team. And yep. when he finally joins them up, he brings the mother box, you get this sense that everything's finally coming together. And mm-hmm. that impact in those moments feels a lot more earned in the Snyder Cut than it did in the Whedon. Like in the Whedon, you're just getting, like you guys said, all of those highlight reel beats, and it's like, okay, well, I'm just following along and you're gonna tell me what I need to
feel
when I need to feel
it. You have two extra hours. I do agree with mm-hmm. what you guys are saying, and I do think Joss is obviously problematic and made some weird choices, but I do think that had there been, I don't know, a Teen Titan movie before this, or Cyborg was introduced in something else, I feel like part of the thing is going back to how we didn't get these characters ahead of time. Like, had right. we had more story with him beforehand, I would have been like, okay, we don't need as much time in this 2-hour Justice League movie. But we were introduced to him in this, so we had to get that whole background. So I'm not disagreeing with you guys, but I think the fact that it was 2 hours didn't help the situation. Whereas with the 4-hour version, it also took a freaking hour and a half for him to even show up more than just standing by the closet. But
true. Yeah. Well, I will say this. Well, I actually want to ask everyone this one question I did have when I was watching this one and after seeing, like, oh, wow, Ray Fisher really became like front and center of this movie more so than Joss Whedon one. And there mm-hmm. have been outcries of some racism accusations. For me, I actually, one of the things I pointed out is like, do you think, and I'm not putting the full onus of this on Joss Whedon because the studio interfered a lot, but do you think that racism may have played a little bit of a role? Maybe not racism, but the fact, I think for me it wasn't so much about racism. I think it just happened to be a black character that it happened to. But I always thought that the assumption was that the reason we cut out so much of Cyborg's storyline was because if audiences were anything like me, they'd probably react like, who the fuck is audience? Who the fuck is Cyborg and why do I care? But, you know, because that was my reaction when they said it's like Cyborg is going to be one of them. And I remember the New 52 when they made Cyborg part of the Justice League. And I'm just like, ugh, why? like why? That's always been my reaction with Cyborg. And I just wondered, it's just like, yeah, I get it. Like he is, of course, the only real person of color in that entire cast. So like, it is pretty damning that he is the one who gets like his storyline basically cut out of the first, you know, the theatrical cut. So I don't know. Like, what are your thoughts on that? Like, do you think it was racism? Do you think it was like more fear about having a Cyborg front and center?
I think it goes back to there was no frame of reference for anyone seeing him. He hadn't been in anything mm-hmm. before. And I think making him front and center without having any kind of established story, people are gonna be like, why are we watching? Who is this? We haven't seen this guy before. Hasn't been any mm-hmm. of the Batman movies, any of the Superman movies. It's just showing up. I don't know. I'm sure there probably were some racial undertones because that's how our society unfortunately is. But I don't know. That's not the first thing that came to my mind. I think it was the lack of people knowing and relating to that character because he hadn't been in anything. I think his right. market probably was smaller for like people that are going to set out to go see a movie just for Cyborg.
Mm-hmm. I think there's multiple factors. I definitely see what you guys are saying. I did notice that in the Whedon version, he got his leg or his arm or something ripped off. I'm like, oh, so the only person who's taking substantial damage is the black guy. I did notice that.
That's also true.
But I like how he was handled in the Snyder version, but still feel like 4 hours is too long for a movie. So I think
I agree 100% with you.
So I definitely think there's those undertones, and Whedon, of course, has the background with that actor. Google it. But I think... Yeah, I don't know. I stopped.
Yeah. It's a loaded question. I get it. I don't, you know, I wasn't there. I don't have answers either, right? So none of us do. But yeah, it was something that did cross my mind because as someone who's a little privy to the gossip, I was just wondering. It's just like, huh, I wonder how much racism did play a role, if any, into this decision. Because like that was the way that they handled Cyborg from the first cut to the Snyder cut, very, very different. And it was a little jarring. Yeah, that was just one of the things I noticed and stuff. And it kind of made those accusations a little bit more like, okay, I see where they're coming from now. So
yeah. Well, and I think that's watching it, having heard everything after, like having heard the real life situations, makes it impossible for me to really analyze it with a fresh perspective. Cause I was watching it being like, grr, Whedon, you've disappointed me, you know? So I'm watching it in a different way. I do think without that, I still would have been like, oh, ripped off his arm, or, you know, I still would have been upset by that.
That transition to something I wanted to ask the group. Like, so in watching the Snyder Cut, whether or not you watched the Whedon version, you know, when it came out or building up to it, or like Ben did after it, there was a 4-year buildup with the hashtag release the Snyder Cut. Like, this is something that fans demanded, they called for, they bullied the studio into doing finally. Do you what kind of impact did that have on you while you were watching it? Like, the anticipation of this. I know for me, there was some anticipation. I was looking forward to seeing what was supposed to be the original cut of this movie, was supposed to be the you know, the launching point for more of the Snyderverse, which, you know, I'm not 100% on board with, but I wanted to see what he actually intended to do with the movie. And so when I sat down to watch it, I had, like Ben said, all of the stuff that I've been reading about Fisher and Whedon and most of the cast leaving WB and going on to other projects because of what happened with this movie. But I was excited to experience the buildup and to see if it could stick the landing after 4 years of conversation about it. Had you been keeping up with what was going on with all of that going into the actual release on HBO Max of it?
I followed somewhat on Twitter and everything, just kind of keeping an eye on it. And I think I wanted to, like you said, Jake, I wanted to see, is it going to be better than the first one? Is it going to be something worth seeing? I was looking to see, are they going to develop the characters more? Are there going to be more backstories where we can feel more invested in some of these people that have just showed up?
Yeah.
Did you tweet? Did you tweet the hashtag?
I did not. No. No, okay. I did not.
Were you so you were excited, but did you want it?
I did not want it. I don't need it.
I didn't care one way or the other. I was like, well, if I got 4 hours to kill, I'll watch it. But
yeah, no, I'm ready to go back to a non-connected DC universe. Just give me a bunch of random ass superhero movies and maybe have a character pop in every now and then. But I don't need the connected multiverse idea. But that's just me.
I would agree,
Nicole,
to that.
For sure.
What about you?
Oh, I had no idea about that at all.
Drama.
Only upon my research did I find out that that is why the Snyder Cut came out. So, but I'm actually looking at them, you know, like I watched them this week and I just watched them as films. And I'm actually kind of glad that people were able to do that and get this film, because I actually think it kind of redeems the original film in a way. If you think the Snyder film, if you're in agreement with me that the Snyder film is superior to the Hollywood cut, and I call it the Hollywood cut because it's, I'm sure it's more than just Josh Whedon who's hands on the
screen.
I think that, you know, the Justice League film had such a bad reputation that this new 4-hour cut that's just, you know, I think it does kind of, in a way, redeem it. So maybe I'm alone in that opinion.
But, no, actually, Nicole, so I agree with you. So this is coming from me as a content creator, filmmaker, right? And we've talked about this in podcasts. Yeah. We've seen what happens when studios interfere and the creatives buckle to that pressure, right? This is the one praise I will give the Zack Snyder cut. It is his vision. It is his vision, and he stuck to it. And you know what? I can't fault him for that, because like, as a filmmaker, that's all you can ask for, right? Like, there was actual conviction in his filmmaking mm-hmm. that you see from beginning to end. Whether or not I like it, it doesn't matter. This is his work, right? And for me, as a filmmaker, I respect that. As opposed to seeing that Hollywood camel that was the first Justice League cut, right? And so, I participated in that release of Snyder Cut only because I, as someone who's been doing this our podcast for a while now, like I just happened to see like what happens when Hollywood is either trying to please everyone and like not really sticking to any principle in storytelling or like or vision. And what we get is like these kind of movies that are so flimsy, flamsy, interchangeable that are just like garbage. And
absolutely,
I think that's and so this is why I actually want. I'm so glad we were getting a chance to actually talk about this, because I think this is a case study that I feel like filmmakers might study this down a few years from now, because like this is interesting, right? This is you're seeing the industry versus the filmmaker here on some level.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And,
I went on to Rotten Tomatoes and pulled some quotes and some things about both of the movies. So the original 2017 release was a 40% on the tomato meter and a 71% on the audience. And one of the quotes that stuck out was, all of Snyder's DC films seem more concerned with repercussions of actions than actions themselves, which I thought was interesting. The 2021 remake, or whatever we want to call it, was a 71% on the tomato meter and then 95% for the audience, which I think the audience score is clearly boosted by the Twitter brigade. And one of the quotes that was on there was, let's not forget the Snyder Cut was in part willed into being by a toxic social media campaign, mob rule begetting a mystical monocultural object that is finally much bigger than its ostensible creator.
That was beautiful, Aaron.
Yeah.
Thank you for quoting that. But but also, like, if there was no pandemic, I don't think there'd be a 95 audience percentile rating for this movie, because I don't think, I mean, maybe the people that are going to watch it would still like it, but I don't think as many people would watch this if they got to go about their normal lives. Like, I think...
No, it gave people something to do.
Right. Like, I think this coming out near the quote-unquote end of the pandemic is helpful for it, because I love y'all, and I will read and watch and do what I need to. But if we weren't pandemic and you're like, we're going to watch this four-hour movie, I'd be like, have fun with that one. So that might affect some of the... And I do just want to say, Nicole, I agree with, well, we're jumping all over. We're not in our review yet, our opinions and recommendations. But I do think the Snyder Cut is a better movie in the sense of, you know what's happening, the whole thing, and it does stick with its, theme and its vision. But as far as enjoyment, I definitely enjoy the other one more.
Interesting.
So I think anyone Snyder else? Is yeah. better, but I'm not going to watch either of them again. But if I were, I already know the story, so I can watch the Cliff Notes Whedon version.
So, I'm definitely never watching.
But I will say this. Hey, guys, wait. I will say this, though. The movie came out at the right time because a lot of us are still stuck at home. It's a 4-hour cut of a movie that kind of is broken up into like 6 chapters, basically, right?
Yeah.
5 if you don't want to count the epilogue. Fine. Basically, more or less, me and Eddie did watch it kind of like, we watched the first 2 parts, which is like an hour, and then we were just like, all right, I'm taking a break, and I'll just like continue this tomorrow. And it felt like if I was just watching a Netflix TV show, which is more or less how people are watching. We are binging 6 hours of content at a time,
right?
Yeah,
any given day of the week. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, how is this really any different? The only difference is that like you're watching one story beginning to end, but like I would argue that like sometimes a season of like Stranger Things could be is that.
Well, and there was conversation about...
Yeah, I mean, when you're
about,
stuck at home...
Sorry, Nicole, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, when you're stuck at home and you're not going to a theater, you're not stuck to that duration. I think length at this point doesn't even matter. You know, the fact that it is like 4 hours is kind of, in a way, irrelevant to at least like overall like watchability of the film, because like it's meant to be seen at home and stuff. So I know that they were going to do it as a mini series, but they kept it as a 4-hour film, and I don't know, like, it's interesting how, even though like it's all streaming, so it is kind of like already mm-hmm. a mini series, especially with all those different parts, but I don't mm-hmm. know. Anyway,
no, that's really interesting. And I think the way my brain works, if it was released
doesn't work
in episodes, sometimes it works. If it was released in episodes, I wouldn't have complained about it. It's just the fact that they released it as one thing that my mind is like, that's too long. So I totally get what you're all saying. I agree, but for whatever reason, a 4-hour one thing is a no for me. But if it was literally 6 episodes and they're like, okay, episode 1, episode 2, like I would have handled that yeah. better. Mm-hmm. And I did watch it in 3 nights. We broke it up by chapters.
Yeah, we watched it over yeah. 3 days too.
And I was explaining yeah, to my teenager yeah. that like this only happened now because it can go straight to streaming. Like if the theaters and everything were still open, they would never have released this 4-hour cut in theater because you're now trying to sell the one theater worth of seating over the length of 2 showings, right?
Absolutely
true. There's
just
no sale for that. So they let him do what he wanted to do for. They gave him another $25 million to recut this movie, and they're put it on HBO Max and hope that some more people subscribe just to watch this. But like, they didn't have to be slaves to the movie theaters, and he was able to do what he wanted to do then. And I think that's the only reason it happened. This is a vehicle of the pandemic and would not have existed outside of it.
Yeah, and I've actually been trying to find like some decent information for the streaming to see like how it has been doing, and I may have actually just found it from 4-6. Let me just see, guys. You've got to talk amongst yourselves while I figure out how much. Oh, wait, hang on. Okay, the Justice League, Zack Snyder's Justice League drew a smaller streaming share, defined by weekly percent share of time spent amongst US TV Vision panel members. Then Wonder Woman 1984, Judas and the Black Messiah, and Godzilla versus Kong.
So you said it had less than those?
It had less audience. Yeah, it had less of a share than people who watched those initial movies. Wonder Woman 1984, Judas and the Black Messiah. This is coming from Variety, a trade magazine that's respected in the industry. So, yeah, it turns out that, you know, maybe people started it, but I guess they weren't.
Right. Well,
or maybe
they
were doing like us and we were just taking pauses, you know?
Well, it could be that, you know, it is twice as long as all of those. So if you get fans starting it, you know, you can watch 2 of the movies in the same amount of time that it takes to watch the Justice League, or even more than that, because if you're spreading it out over set amount of time. And I know some of the like YouTube streaming and that kind of stuff, it only counts as a view if you watch a certain duration of it. And I'm not sure if that's the same for HBO, whereas maybe if you watch it like we are in segments, maybe it doesn't count as a view unless you're watching a significant portion of it at one time.
Yeah. Did they shoot themselves in the foot by releasing it at once instead of doing an episodic release where you built some anticipation, you built some excitement as those episodes came out over the course of 4 weeks or whatever it could have been, instead of just dumping it? It's the same, you know, the same argument for Netflix or HBO shows that are like, do we give you the whole season up front so you can binge it, or do we give you an episode every week? And I think if you look at Disney Plus, that's working better. Like, there's conversations happening that get new viewers to come to the show as you go slowly. But if you give it to everybody at once, now everybody can talk about the entire thing and you can make a decision based on the whole show or movie whether or not you're going to go and experience it.
Right. It's one conversation versus 6 conversations.
Exactly.
Right. And I actually saw a study on this, and they were actually using, I want to say, The Mandalorian, the first season, and The Witcher, because they both came out around the same time, more or less around the same number of episodes, to see like what had more longevity in terms of the metric. And the metric here, though, was unfortunately mostly social media call-outs and discussions. It turned out that The Witcher still beat out The Mandalorian in terms of actual longevity. And that would be because even though it was all episodes are dropped, they were dropped in different markets slower over time. They're not dropped everywhere at once, as opposed to The Mandalorian. I think Mandalorian was dropped one episode. So you would get like that buzz for like that one day, that night it would drop, and then it would drop immediately. Whereas opposed to what they saw with The Witcher would be like almost like, what's that diagram? The that that curve, the curve, the bell curve. It would be more of a bell curve, right? So it was, it's an that was an interesting study. If I can find that link, I'll send it to you guys, because I think it's a fascinating read. And it's just one of those things, we're entering a new age of media consumption where like all these questions that we ourselves are asking as consumers and sometimes content creators, like these are things that there are no answers to just yet. I think it's going to take another 10 years before we have like solid evidence as to what is the best tactic to release a movie for a new generation of people who are consuming media in a very different way.
Yeah. And it'll be completely different in 10 years. You know, the platforms will be, I mean, it's changing daily right now during the pandemic. So, you know, when we get out of this, it's going to, will we go back to theaters and all that kind of stuff? Those questions are still up in the air for what's going to end up happening.
All right. So speaking of going back, Jake, that is a lovely segue. Do we want, what else do we want to say about these movies? We did not, unfortunately. I feel like it would have been really hard to do the plan of let's talk about the first one, then let's talk about the second one, because you can't really talk about them without comparing them. So anyone have anything they want to say about these movies before we get to recommendations? As you all flip through your notes frantically.
I do want to know why Martian Manhunter showed up for like all of one scene.
And then...
Two scenes.
Yeah,
it was kind of like, why are you throwing him in here? There's no point.
Yeah, I agree. Was he the seventh? I want to know. Do you guys remember the Unite the Seventh? Was he supposed to be the seventh one?
So there's been a few different things that I've read that he was always planned on being that character that has been in the other two Snyder movies in Man of Steel and Batman v Superman, helping Lois and working with the government, that he was always going to be Martian Manhunter. But then the original script for the end scene where he comes and visits Bruce, that was going to end up being one of the Green Lanterns. And that originally this was going to be a platform to have Manhunter as the seventh, which was the original tagline for this movie when it came out for the first time, guys. And then there only ended up being six of them. That's what he's referencing.
Oh, wow.
And then they were going to tease you at the end with yet another one. It was supposed to be Green Lantern coming down and being like, I've been off in space doing my own shit, but now I'm going to help you guys.
Well, that makes sense, because we saw the Green Lantern ring in both versions, actually, with the little fight sequence. Obviously, one of them got more time than the other one did.
WB, the one thing that I read about how it was supposed to be Green Lantern at the end, WB refused to let Snyder put him in to this recut of it. Whether or not that's true or not, I've only seen one source for it. So,
I mean, I believe it. I you know, they were probably just like, this is costing us too much money already. We can't promise more movies that we just might not make, guys. So, like, no. Take it
right
off.
And
take
Green Lantern off. Is such a touchy subject.
Well, the first Green Lantern movie was so perfect. I'm joking. I'm joking.
I actually like that movie.
I mean, I hate it. I like Blake Lively. You know.
I do have to get going soon, guys.
Oh yeah. Let's wrap it up. Do you like right this second, or can we?
Oh
can we
yeah.
Wrap.
Wait. Oh wait. I just want to say one last thing about the Snyder Cut. Okay. Oh, go ahead, Nicole. I'll let you go first.
No, I was just going to say I have a couple minutes, but you can say one last thing.
Well, I do have one last thing to say about the Snyder Cut that we didn't touch upon a little, and that is where the Joss Whedon cut was all about Steppenwolf, the Snyder Cut makes it front and center. The big bad is actually Darkseid. How do you guys feel about that? Did we like it? Did we not? I'm mixed.
The reveal was kind of... not anticlimactic. It was like in the Marvel, we had Thanos appear in some of the cutscenes, and you get hints of him and his name dropped. That hadn't really been done. So I think they're trying to set it up for, you know, a showdown, probably movie or something down the line. I didn't hate it, but I wasn't like blown away by it, because I don't think it was.
I liked it, but I didn't like that we didn't actually get a fight with him at the end.
Right.
I thought it was going to be him and Superman, and then Superman took out Steppenwolf. I was like, oh, so this team is pointless when Superman can just do everything himself.
Right. Which I loved. I love Darkseid. He's my favorite DC villain outside of the Joker or of the Batman Rogues Gallery. And so I was super happy that he was going to be a part of this, and that if you have the level of power that they've put in this movie with our heroes, that he really is the only villain that they can go toe-to-toe with them. And so also the changes where he's the one that came to Earth to look for the anti-life equation. He's the one that Steppenwolf is working for very clearly, and Steppenwolf's motivations in the Snyder Cut then became very real. And actually, mm-hmm. he became a worthwhile antagonist, not just some guy obsessed with his mother that's in a box. And yep. I like the changes in the villains very much with the inclusion of Darkseid. And then Granny Goodness is there, and I got all geeky, giddy, and everything.
They didn't name drop her, though. I was so upset. Or give her, like, one line of dialogue. I wanted her. And I wish she was a little older and a little stouter, but whatever. You know, I can forgive. I got to see her on screen. I'm okay with that.
Right? Maybe, like, in the 8-hour version, they'll give her
that. Rosie O'Donnell should be at that age to be the perfect Granny Goodness, right?
She could be, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
The one thing, I just want to say, the only beef I have with Darkseid, though, was that I think they made him a little too snarly. I kind of like my Darkseid to be a little bit more cool, calm, collected, like very strategic, right? Here they made him too much of a brawler, and I was a little bit, I'm like, all right, whatever. I can forgive that, but
his badassery should be not spoken. I like
my Darkseid brooding also, you know, like all my heroes.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So do we want to get into final recommendations? Nicole, you want to go first?
Watch the Snyder Cut and then watch the Whedon if you want to watch both.
Okay.
But if you do want to watch one, I would say, and at your own pace, you should watch the Snyder Cut, just because I think you get a better sense of, one, what's going on, and two, who everyone is and what their motivation is and what they're feeling internally. And don't mind the overindulgent slow motion stuff. But I also, Rolando said something a little earlier that I do want to also, for anyone who's interested, he said that from years from now, people will, or maybe even sooner than years from now, people will watch both films to see Hollywood versus filmmaker. Well, if you are interested in that, there's actually a bunch of films from our past that you can watch. And one I will recommend to our audiences is an Italian film called Terminal Station. You should watch that and then watch the American recut called Indiscretion of American Wife. It's black and white, but they're both under an hour and a half. And you really, really get a good sense of Hollywood and trying to move a plot forward. And just another story that's told more so focused on characters and atmosphere. So if you're interested in that, once again, I will recommend Terminal Station and Indiscretion of an American Wife.
Is there some podcast that they could listen to a discussion about those two movies?
I mean, hey, Rolando, how open would you be to that?
No.
Well said.
If you made me watch Justice League, I'm going to make you watch an Italian black and white film from the 50s.
We'll talk off
later. All right, Aaron, do you recommend this movie?
Whedon, no. Snyder, yes.
Okay. I recommend neither of them, but the Whedon one made me happy with bright colors, and that's my recommendation. I think the Whedon one's good for kids. I would let kids watch it. I would not let kids watch the Snyder one because there were too many horses that died.
One of my kids watched it with us, so yeah.
I'm impressed that your boys made it through the 4 hours, or one of them did.
One of them did, yeah.
That's still impressive for them.
Yeah.
I would absolutely recommend it if you've been watching the other Snyder movies. If you want to get an idea of the DC connected universe, it is a great final chapter, if you want to consider it that. It leaves a lot to be questions and what could have happened. But I love Man of Steel. Batman v Superman is one of my favorite background popcorn flicks. Like, it's not a great movie, but I just like having it on, and I'll pay attention to certain scenes. This one is going to be right there with it. Like, I could just have this on while I'm doing arts and crafts for 4 hours and you know, enjoy it.
I'm envisioning Jake in arts and craft time for 4 hours watching this movie, and it's very scary.
They make us do arts and crafts every day at 2 o'clock. And we have to come to the hall and get together.
Yeah. Right.
What about you guys?
I would say, I didn't think I was going to, but I came out of Justice League Snyder Cut recommending it. I was like, you know what? Split it up into 2 nights, 3 nights if you have to. It's actually, I think it does a good job of kind of telling the story, and it made me satisfied at the end. I was just, I finished it saying, it's like, I'm glad I watched it. I'm glad I finished this.
It was an accomplishment.
Yeah. Well, for me also, the Snyder Cut, I felt like I really kind of, yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. I enjoyed the fact that it gave me more of the story that I was missing out. And it just worked perfect, like being a pandemic, being home. I already have watched everything else on Netflix. So this was perfect to give me my superhero action.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Awesome. Yep. So for us, our next thing would be to bug Jake and say, hey, Jake, what's next?
Well, this is coming out during our season six. We're getting pretty close to wrapping up season six, which is villains have taken over our show. So I don't know exactly
chaos,
which,
basically.
It's either
complete and total.
My final pick or Ben's final pick, which you can listen to our last book review and catch up on which book we're actually going to be talking about. Nah. But, you know, what's coming out on your show soon, guys?
I think the next episode is Mortal Kombat, which I'm looking forward to. Because the first one is so bad, but so good. And it gave us like one of the greatest songs ever, the Mortal Kombat.
I still own that CD. Yes, I do.
It's so good. That song still holds up. It's so good.
I still run to that song.
Yeah, you still hear it on the radio or at the gym. Like, that is a song that just will not die. So I'm so excited to talk about that. I don't know how the WB movie is going to be, but if it's anything as campy as the original one, I'm here for it. And then we also
think it's
going to
be bloody.
Ducks.
Very, very
I
bloody.
Hope so. I hope so. But yeah, Mighty Ducks would be then the following week.
Nice.
If you guys don't know.
Yeah, we've been watching the Disney show.
Oh, what'd you guys think of it?
Oh, I like it. We watch it, the four of us at home. Yeah. So we've been enjoying it.
I think it's such a cute show. I'm actually very, very, I'm surprised. Full disclosure. I've only seen D3, The Mighty Ducks. I haven't seen The Mighty Ducks. So I will watch The Mighty Ducks.
You haven't seen the original one?
I have not seen the original one.
I know.
D3.
How are we married? How did this happen? How did you sneak this under the radar?
Nice.
So yeah, so I will catch up. But I'm looking forward now to seeing The Mighty Ducks because I think this show is so cute. And I'm like, I think the kids are so great. They're so cool.
Awesome. And so where can our listeners find your podcast?
Yes. Great question. Thank you. You can find our podcast on our website, remakesrebootsrevivals.com. You can find us on your podcast apps, you know, Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals, and hit us up on Instagram, Remakes, Reboots, Revivals.
All right. Well, for the Brotherhood of Batman, I am Ben, your sunshine into Goth Ham. Thank you for listening.
I'm Aaron. I'm the oldest out of us. I'll clean this up. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks to our guests.
And yeah, thank you guys for joining us. Jake,
thank you for having us. Yeah, it's been awesome.
Bye.
Good talking to you guys. Thanks for joining us.
So thank you for listening to that. Again, if you wanted to hear us talk more with the guys, you can listen to their episode at Brotherhood of Batman podcast. They actually opened up and we all talked about media that we indulged in throughout the week. And that was a fun portion of it. So you should definitely listen.
It's cute. I love the name. Geek and Week.
Geek and Week. Exactly.
No. Week in Geek. The Week in Geek.
Yeah, we should probably double check that.
No, the Week in Geek.
The Week in Geek, we're sure?
Yeah, that's okay. A positive.
Okay, all right. It I don't cute. Know, man. You being, Rolando being positive about something.
That's true. If I'm positive about something, there's still a good 50-50 chance it's wrong. But you guys are here because you guys want to know the main reason. Nicole, do you think the Justice League Zack Snyder cut was needed?
I'm going to go ahead and say no.
Wow, that's interesting. Why not?
Okay, so if you listened to this whole episode, which you're here, so you did, I preferred Zack Snyder's version. However, I don't think that it was that much better than the theatrical released cut, I'll say. Because I don't want to call it the original.
Okay, so there we go. So you're, all right, so you don't think all right, so now I'm confused.
It's almost as if it's a step up, right? It's not like thousands of steps up, and it's like, oh, this is so superior. It's just a step up from the theatrical cut.
But you said the Zack Snyder cut. You meant the Whedon cut?
No, I mean Zack Snyder's Justice League is a step up from the theatrically released Justice League. Right. Yes, because there's a lot of negative that I consider and a lot of self-indulgence. And the 4-hour thing is, although we had a really great talk about, you know, length and how duration's kind of not a thing anymore when you're just watching shit at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the end of the day, it's a film And a lot, and if you look at it objectively as a film and not a miniseries, because it is a film, it was released as a film, correct, it's still, it's just filled with unnecessary bullshit. And scenes that just last a little too long. And of course, at the end of the day, he's just not my style. I mean, one of my absolute favorite filmmakers is Sergio Leone, and a lot of people could say all of his films were just filled with unnecessary shit that went on too long. Rolando, Sergio Leone, you know who that is?
The guy who did The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly?
Yes, and I'm going to refer more to Once Upon a Time in the West. Have you seen that film?
Is that the one where they're all trying to kill the guy who stole the gold?
The gold is more so in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Okay, so I don't...
Maybe. Once Upon a Time in the West has Charles Bronson. It has Henry Fonda, Claudia Cardinale, Jason Robards. No, none of
this.
Is there
a prostitute who gets raped or something in that one?
Kind of-ish, yeah.
I think I have seen it. Fairly recently, too.
A lot of... I've seen it a bunch of times in film school. So maybe you saw it in film school where it begins with these men waiting for another man... be on a train.
In the train.
And then he comes, he kills them, and then it goes to the other guy who kills a bunch of people at their house, right? So those are the two introduction to two characters. And that's all it is. And other than story, it's just introducing you to character, right? So the film is pretty much 3 hours long. It's a very simple plot. But why is it 3 hours long? Because Sergio Leone takes his time with, like, introducing you to the characters. His scenes go on and on, right? But to me, there's a point to it. He's kind of actually saying something in his film, and I'm not going to get into that conversation. Unless you want to hear that episode, reach out. But Zack Snyder, is when I'm watching those scenes that go on and on, that are just slow motion, that are happening for, I'm thinking about it, you should be having a conversation with yourself. Why is this filmmaker choosing this every time you watch a film, right? Every time you think that it's at least that type of film, not merely pure entertainment. Zack Snyder, I do think considers himself an artist. So why is he presenting it in such a way? Why is he filming it in such a way? What is he trying to say? And at the end of the day, he's not trying to say anything, and it's unnecessary.
Okay. I hear you.
Long-winded. But no, that's why it's not needed.
It's valid. I think it's fair. Mm-hmm. I actually am going to... I think I might be shocked to say this, but like, the slow motion grew on me a little in this movie. Only because, I will say this, the main reason for me that the slow motion started growing on me in this movie, as opposed to some of the other stuff that he has done, is because I think sometimes the problem with like superhero movies and Transformers is that the action gets so convoluted that you can't really focus on what's happening.
Yeah.
And like here, it was, he kind of used the slow motion to his advantage to kind of show you what is going on. And it works also when you're trying to do a comic book adaptation, for obvious reasons, because the comic is static, right? Mm-hmm. And the motion is created through the artistry. Here, he tries to like kind of mimic that at times. And I think, you know, I think Marvel is more successful at those at times, because for the Avenger movies, they only did that like maybe once or twice. And that makes it more impactful. When it's happening all the time, it loses its impact.
Interesting.
But that's just speaking to that part of the aesthetics for Zack Snyder. I think for me, the reason, and I am so surprised I'm saying this, but I think this movie was needed only because I think this movie was so much better than the theatrical cut because, and I said this on the podcast, so you heard me, but it is because there is one singular vision to this story, to this movie. And because of that, it felt there was unison, right? Mm. It wasn't a combobulated mess. There was, you can see that Zack Snyder was, he had an idea and he executed it. Whether or not I liked it, that's not what I'm critiquing here. I'm critiquing here the fact that it's just like, okay, there's conviction behind his work. And sometimes for me as a filmmaker, I can say I can appreciate that. Now, I will also say this, talking to some random people who have also seen, because it came up today in conversation when I was at the gym, someone mentioned, it's like, oh, I saw the Zack Snyder Justice League over the weekend. I liked it more so than the original. I was just like, yeah, why do you think that is? Her reaction, mind you, it was a her. Not that I'm saying girls don't enjoy.
Why is that important, Rolando?
No, because she didn't look the kind of girl who enjoys comic book movies.
Okay.
Or movies in general.
That's judgmental.
I am. I'm very judgmental, especially at the gym, right? I'm going to the gym. So, But no, she, as she said, she's like, I liked it because it made more sense to me. Like, watching the movie, I kind of knew who they were and I knew what was happening.
Yeah.
I didn't get that in the original thing. And I'm just like, yeah, I agree with you. It sucks that it's a 4-hour fucking movie that it takes to do that. But you know what? Conviction was, he stood by his gun and he made a decent movie that is, will I ever watch it again? Probably not. Mm. But you know what? I will say this. It's just like, I came out so much pleasantly surprised, right? I guess, and I don't know if that's a testament to like what a low bar I had.
Yeah.
you know, that he like surpassed it. It's just like, oh, I'm shocked because I set a really low bar because I didn't even care for the first Justice League, right? So I don't know.
No, it was terrible. You know, it's, I agree with you in so many ways, but I don't agree with you in the sense where your answer to whether or not this was needed, I don't think it applies, if that makes sense, you know?
Well, the reason I think it was needed, though, was because I think it fixes... I think the Justice League movie is a... It's a pity that it was so shitty when it came out in theatrical release, right? Which is a shame because, like I said, these characters are mythic. These characters are, like, everyone. Everyone in pop culture knows Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Right? You cannot say that. You can say that now about Iron Man, but like you couldn't say that 15 years ago. 15 years ago, you could say Wonder Woman, people know who she is. You could say Superman, people know who that is, who he is. You could say Batman, everyone knows who that is, right?
Yeah.
The big DC heroes, outside of Spider-Man, I would say mostly 15 years ago, no, right? It's a shame that the Justice League movie was so shitty because there was no reason it should have been. There was just none, right? Even a competent filmmaker could make a popcorn flick that would be enjoyable. Because the studio interfered so much, it's like kind of it's a shame, and it's just like wow, what a way to kind of drop the ball on bringing these greatest superheroes
exactly
on screen for the first time. And so Justice League Zack Snyder's cut, for me, the reason it's needed is because it redeems that.
So, you know, that is what that's what I said at the end of the episode with those guys, where it was like, this film was, in a sense, and I'm going to contradict past Nikki, too. So, you know, the listener was already being like, wait a minute. Past Nikki, when we were talking to the Brotherhood of Batman, was like, this film was needed in order to redeem the Justice League's reputation with fans, right? The fact that the theatrically cut Justice League was just so harshly received, that this film was at least like, okay, at least people can now think of a Justice League film in a somewhat positive light, right? Well, is that enough, one, for it to be actually needed? Because at the end of the day, DC fans deserve more, and they just deserve an entire retcon of these beloved characters, which they're getting with the new Batman movie, so might as well do the rest of them, except maybe not Wonder
technically
Woman.
Technically, the Batman movie is not a retcon. The Batman movie is going to be like a outside of the
oh my god
universe.
Hollywood is so frustrating.
It is. Well, it is only now because like we're playing this game of like who can do what Marvel did.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, DC.
And the answer is just no one. Just stop.
Yeah.
Just stop.
But that's the thing too. Marvel's not even that good. It's just basic. You just got to be basic. Stop trying to be so cinematic. And well, no, I'm not going to say that. Zack Snyder, continue being an artist, but maybe not with this property. You kind of need something a little bit more basic.
The zombie movie that he's coming out with?
No, I'm saying in terms of a good cinematic universe for comic book movies. Should be kind of just more not as artistic as Zack Snyder is trying to go for. And when I say artistic, you know, I say that in like quotation marks.
Well, yeah, no, because I think artistry is subjective also, right?
At like, 100%. Know. And so I do think that he did a better job with character building, and there's some positives there too, but I don't think that he needs to. It didn't work for me. But and also, I just don't think that it was needed in the sense where it completely redeemed the Justice League. In that sense, like people are not gonna watch it because of how bad the original is. That's one.
That's also true. I mean, and that was me.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have watched it
because of
not for the podcast.
The name Zack Snyder. So I do think that DC, at the end of the day, too, it should probably just retcon their whole cinema universe.
Warner Brothers, because they own DC.
WB, DC, whoever the fuck it be, retcon.
I don't know
that.
Who owns the Warner Brothers. I think AT&T owns them now, right?
Time Warner owns them.
Yeah, but I think AT&T bought Time Warner.
Really? Let's see.
Go ahead, check me. Fact check me.
Warner Brothers Pictures Ah, damn it. I went to the wrong page. Let me go to Wikipedia. It will tell me right there. It says its parent is Warner Brothers Studios and Network.
AT&T has completed acquisition of Time Warner Inc., bringing together the global media entertainment leaders Warner Brothers, HBO, and Turner.
Where do you see that?
I Googled it. It's at about.AT&T.com. So this is from AT&T themselves.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I remember. Yeah. So actually, that's why in HBO Max, when you get to the bottom, you see like Turner Classic Movies and Boomerang, right? Like all
yeah,
these properties,
all the Warner
that
Brothers,
owned,
yeah.
Yeah, that are owned basically now by AT&T. Guys, I mean, I know we're constantly complaining about Hollywood's unoriginality, but like this all stems from like these companies just merging into one mega company. So
seriously, yeah.
You
the
wanna
only
kill creativity.
Yeah. The only long lasting film company has been Disney, and that's turned into a business powerhouse. You know, back
oh, yeah,
in the
no,
day.
So you're right. Disney may be the longest lasting, but they're the ones who are owning everything too.
Yeah. And so, if you want a little bit of a film history, back in the day, studios, they completely owned themselves. I mean, were they completely art making machines? No, because they were run by like, you know, guys with a whiplash, like kind of, you know, like they are still till to this day. But they owned themselves. They owned theaters. That's how they distributed. And then when actors, you know, wanted to get out of their contracts that they felt that they were binded to, and theaters did too, the studios collapsed and needed to be bought out by other companies. And that happened in the late 60s mm-hmm. and 70s and stuff. And that's when the change happened. And that's when in the 80s, just really quick, because of the fact that all of the studios now, you know, other studios went out of bankruptcy, like United Artists and MGMs and stuff, they became just solely business-based. And film has changed because of it. Film has now become a business purely, and no longer at its main focus in art form, which is why I think film is dead in that sense. A lot of people would disagree with me in that sense. So anyway, we'll get to that in another day.
That's it. I mean, look at the conversations that Justice League, Zack Snyder cut have brought out.
Exactly.
And I think that's ultimately why I'm glad we covered this movie. That's it. Like,
that's it.
If only
yeah.
for that. I think it's going to be one of those interesting film study pieces, right? I think it's gonna be like one of those
yeah, you keep saying that they already have a bunch of films though that you can study that for, but if you wanted to watch one in terms of a superhero movie, you could do that.
All right, fine. How about this? I feel like it's something that like a lot of YouTubers are going to keep making video essays about.
That's true.
For,
yes,
the next 15-20 years.
Yes, there's plenty of examples of a studio film versus a film an artist film that you can look at. But if you wanted to do one on YouTube of a film that done today's day and age, then definitely do Justice League. I would watch your video. So if you're out there thinking about that, or maybe we should just make that video ourselves, Rolando.
We could. I don't have the energy to do YouTube videos.
We're at our computers all day, man.
That is why.
Something else?
I don't have. Someone do it and just like, you know what? I'll throw my voice in there, like, if you want. It's just like, I'll even get on camera and be like,
yeah,
I'll do a quick, like, little snippet interview. Be like, I'm so glad you're doing this.
I totally feel you on that, so.
That's it. I'll be one of your sources.
Yeah.
But that is it. I think we have talked. We have just run just as long as a snacks.
Yeah.
Snacks.
Yeah. We should call this Zack Snyder's Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
No, that's it. Remakes, Reboots, Revivals. The Zack Snyder cut.
The Zack Snyder cut. I love it. I love it. I hate it.
Yeah.
It was too long.
I mean, yeah. I don't disagree, but I also find myself enjoying the movie. So what can I say?
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed it more than the theatrical cut. So
I was actually shocked that when you said that at the other podcast, it's just like, huh.
Yeah, I knew it. I knew it. I wish I could have seen you because I said it too. I'm like, I feel like I'm going to shock people when I say this.
Yeah.
But that's how
me.
Terrible the theatrical cut was. And
it's
stuff.
Bad. It's so bad.
And we've talked about this before on the podcast. I don't think story should be the main focus of films, right? It's a visual art form. I think story should be there, but it should work at its own pace and it should do its own thing. It doesn't need to be the main driving force of a film for me.
I feel story should be not the main driving force, but it is important, as is the visuals. I feel like they should complement each other.
I care more for tone and atmosphere and what you're trying to message instead of story. Mm. Those are my three important things. And
I do like
film.
Message too. That's a good one.
Yeah. So
yeah, that's it. I have nothing else to say. I am ready to call it a day.
At 9 o'clock at night when we're recording this.
That's my life now, right?
Seriously. All right. So. Well, until next time, guys. Staying original.